Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for coming. It's great to see you. I'd like to thank our sponsors. Today's shiur, like all the shiur in this academic year, have been sponsored by an anonymous donor, Leilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandit and Zadik Ben Kalman, Zichron Yerivracha. And today's shiur has been specifically, the shiur of this morning, have been sponsored by Sarah and Ronen Kori and family, in memory of their father and grandfather, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Eliezer Schertz, on his sixth Yahrzeit. Are our sponsors here now? If not, then thank you anyway. Really grateful for that sponsorship. So as you know, I've been away for a couple of weeks. I was in England. Baruch Hashem, doing nice things. Went for a wedding and went to see my in-laws and other logistic things. But I'm glad to be back, and I hope not to be away for the rest of the year, going all the way through to the Chagim. I'm not planning any other trips. So hopefully we'll be able to get something done. And I'd like to get right into today something we've never talked about before. Moving off the shiur we had 2 or 3 weeks ago on minhagim, we started with an overview of what are minhagim, different kinds of minhagim, and there are different ways to chop up a typology of minhagim. We looked at klal Yisrael minhagim, community, family, personal. Today I want to look at one specific minhag of the wedding, which took up a lot of a lot of ink was spilt on it, which is: do you have the chuppah inside, or do you have the chuppah outside? And this can be, you know, very dramatic. I remember I was at a wedding of a student a few years ago, happened in the winter, in the torrential rain. And I went to the Masada Kiddush, and they had the chuppah set up outside. It was drenched completely. And I said, come on, just move the chuppah in. There was a marquee or something. Move it. He says, no, we have to have the chuppah outside. So they took the poor chos and the poor kal, and they stood them in. It was like throwing down rain, and both of them were dripping under the chuppah. Their clothes were pasted onto their skin. I think to myself, okay, is that really necessary or required? Where does that, you know, stand in terms of, do you have to be moser nefesh to that degree to have your chuppah outside? Let's have a look at it. Before we start specifically and get into that minhag, which you'll see, maybe some of this will be new to you. A lot of this shiur when I was preparing was new to me. Minhagim that we no longer have, but which we see the vestigial remains of. Yes?
Are there any hashlachot from the dinim
of sukkah? Any hashlachot for what?
From the dinim of sukkah.
Oh, okay, that's very interesting. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. And one of them is whether you can have a chuppah under a glass dome. And we'll actually talk about a little bit about that. Thank you for raising that. Let's start with number one. It's a general point, but it goes off onto the issue of minhagim generally. And this is to do with tefillah, but it spreads beyond that. And I do want to look at tefillah in future weeks. I want to look at the issue of the nusach ha-tefillah and where that comes from and whether you're required to stick to it. The pronunciation of Hebrew is a very hot potato. You know, are you an O, an Oi, an Ow, this kind of person? If you're a Jewish krechser, you probably say all of those things. But let's have a look at number one. Says the Magen Avraham, here he's talking about whether you should have piyutim in the tefillah. Some people are very for them. Some people have them in the small print. Let's have a look. Number one. Ha'arizal, says the Magen Avraham. Lo haya oimer piyutim hu pizmonim. Elama shesidro harishonim. He didn't put any new piyutim in the tefillah. Only the ones that there was an established masorah. Kegoyin ha'kaliri from Eliezer ha'kalir. Shenitku adas ha'emes. And the kabbalistically resonant ones. No new songs in the tefillah, please. But you know something, with all due cover to the Arizal, if you have a minhag and that's how your shul does it, then you should stick with your minhag. Because there are lots of ways to do things. Key, and here's the key point. Ki yud beit sha'arim b'shamayim. There are 12 different avenues, if you like, to heaven. Neged yud bet shvatim, just like there are 12 tribes. V'kol shevet yesh lo shar u'minag levad mashenizka b'lamora u'begemora sheshav elekol. Apart from that, which is common to all Jews, which we get from the halachic system, there are 12 different tribes, and therefore there are 12 different ways of doing things, 12 different routes. By the way, this is one of the origins of having 12 windows in the shul. There is a halacha, a minhag, it's actually brought down a halacha to have 12 windows in a shul. If you go to shul, count some of the architect windows in the architecture, you'll see 12. It's from this idea, and therefore do not be scared of your minhag. V'zeh loshen ha-gemara to Yerushalmi, afa pi she-shalachnu lachem. Even though they sent from there to the Seder Tfilas, even they gave us a Seder Tfilas, Al tashanu minhag avoseicha. Don't change from your minhagim. And certain communities are very proud of their minhagim. We today are going to look at a minhag of the Yekim. The Yekim are super proud of their minhagim. Sometimes they a little bit overreach, I think, and they claim their minhagim go all the way back to the Bais Rishon, and this is how everybody was doing things. I'm not sure I always go with that, but we'll see certain things which we've lost, but the Yekim nevertheless cling on to. Okay, so let's talk about weddings. Why would you want to have a wedding outside Bichlal? And the answer is based on a bracha that is given in Bereishis to Avram. So look at number 2 and 3. I'm going to do the first few sources very quickly because the real excitement is in the second half of the shir and I don't want to lose time. So these are familiar pesukim. Vesanti etzaracha ka'afa ha'aretz. So God says, I'm going to make your descendants, he says to Avram, like the sand, like the dust of the earth. Asheim yochol ish limnoit et afa ha'aretz. Can anyone count the grains of dust on the earth? Gam zaracha yimaneh. So that's how your seed will be counted. And then a little bit later, after the battle of the four kings and the five kings, number 3, Achar hadvarim ha'ele hayadvar Hashem el Avram, b'machazeh, he gives him a vision. Lemor, and he says to him, Al tira Avram, do not fear. Anochi magen lach, I'm going to protect you. Sechar char b'moed, your reward will be great. V'yotze aseh achutze, and he takes him outside. Now, where is he taking him? This is in a dream. It already said it's in a vision. In the vision, he took him outside. The Yomehin, he said, Habedna Shamaima, look at the sky. Usforacha kachavim, kochavim, count the stars. Ituchal isforatam, can you count them? The Yomelon, he said to him, Koi Yezarecha, that's going to be your children. Like the stars, kachavim hashamaima. And in fact, we even see in the Tochacha later on in Dvarim number 4, when we are. It's foretold that we will suffer because of our sins. V'nishartem mivatei ma'at, we will be left small in number. Tachat ata hayitem kachavei hashamayim. Instead of what you used to be like the stars of the sky, etc. Laroiv kilo shamata b'kol Hashem elokecha. Now, what's going on here? Because the Jewish people have never been such a big nation. We've always been a small nation. We're certainly not as, you know, the trillions and trillions of stars that are around. I brought you a couple of ideas. This, there's a lot of Torah you could give on this. I brought you in this footnote from Rav Meir Shapiro, the founder of Daf Yomi, Chachmei Lublin. And he says, he picks up the point that actually it was still light outside when God showed him the stars. The Bechor Shor also says this. Look at number 6 for a second. V'yotzeh sa'achutza. V'ra'a lo kachavim bayom. It was still the daytime. And he showed him the stars, but machazeh in a dream, as it were. Kamo b'cholam ki adayin ayayom, because it was still daytime. How do I know? Says the Bechor Shor, it was daytime. Kamo shuar mekan, because after that it says vayhi hashemesh lavo, and then the sun set. So when he went out, as it were, to see the stars, it was still daytime. So says Rav Meir Shapiro, that's the point, that when you go out to count the stars and you see the sun. And you see that one sun can outshine millions of stars. So too the Jewish people, even though they're few in number, they can be superstars, even though they're surrounded by trillions of stars. A little bit different from how we imagined it. I also saw a nice idea that you see the stars, you think they're tiny. That's because you're so far away. When you get close to them, you realize they're giants. So too, when you see other Jews and you think they're small in your eyes, it's because you're just too distant from them. Get a little bit closer to them and you'll see that they're all superstars. So there are lots of beautiful ideas you can say. Rashi says the idea that he took Avram Avinu out of his mazal, quite a famous idea. Avram Avinu said, I'll never have children. And God says, what do you mean you'll never have children? Never say never. Get out of your mazal, start a new mazal. And of course, soon they become not Abraham and Sarah, but Avraham and Sarah, etc., etc. What's that got to do with us? What's all this got to do with us? So go over to the page. This is where page 2, where we start with weddings. Number 7. Says the Ramah, and this is the first halachic, if you like, psak on this issue. Yesh omrim la'asot ha'chupa tachat ha'shamayim. There is a view that you should make the chupa under the stars, under the sky. L'siman tov. It's a siman tov. Siman tov, we won't talk about mazel tov today, that's another shir. We'll talk about siman tov. She'yehei zara'am k'kochvei ha'shamayim. That the stars should be like, their children, the descendants should be like the stars in the sky. And if you think about it, this is a beautiful bracha. The idea that you're starting a new mazal, like we just said, Avram and Sarah started a new reality. Even if you say, well, look, it's in the middle of the afternoon. What's the point of having it under the stars? It's still daytime. That's the whole point. It was daytime when God showed Abraham the stars, as it were. So whether it's daytime or whether it's nighttime, there's a yesh omrim to make the chuppah under the sky. And in fact, that's based on an earlier ruling of someone called the Maharam Mintz. The Maharam Mintz, Rav Moshe Mintz, was a cousin of the Mahari Mintz, the Rav, I think he was Yosef Mintz. And the Maharam Mintz says a very interesting thing. Number 8, the Chein Anan Avdinan, this is what we do. He's living in the 1400s in Germany. This is what we do. Actually, in northern Italy, I should say. This is what we do. Gam Kein Benisuin, Kama Simanim Chamurim. Oh, not just Simanim. Signs, we'll see what that means, but simanim chamurim, meaning don't take these lightly, they're serious. Alinyane hatzlocha, because we want to give hatzlocha to the couple. Kagoin, avukos, we carry torches, beshat hamain, when we do the mine. So I saw this word mine, I looked it up in all the Rosh Tevis dictionaries, couldn't find what it was. And I was really tearing my hair. Well, if I'd had any hair, I would have been tearing it out. And I was wondering, how am I going to translate this word? I have no idea what it means. And it turns out that this is actually the linchpin of the whole shir at the beginning of facility, the first half. So when you do the mine, I'm not going to translate it now. You have these torches, hamara la'oiru l'simcha, because it's a simon for light and simcha. V'chein tachat ha'shamayim, so too you have to have the chuppah under the sky, v'akochavim under the stars, k'loim ha'koyez arachem, k'kochav ha'shamayim. V'chein hachitim, so to wheat, shezorkim al roshan, we throw wheat on the heads of the chosan and kala, v'oimrim, and we shout out to them, pru uruvu. I'm not sure many people still throw wheat at weddings. My son married an Italian, and they throw rice at the wedding. At first, my son thought that they were going to throw cooked rice, and he thought, oh, what am I going to do with my suit? So my daughter-in-law-to-be looked at him and said, no, it's not cooked rice. We throw raw rice at the wedding, and they throw rice. And people throw rice, they throw wheat. I saw one minhag, it says you throw apples at the chosan and kala. I said, that could be... That could be a little bit distressing, depending on what kind of apples you're throwing. But nevertheless, these are simanim chamurim. But he referred to this mine, mem, yud, yun, yud, nun. And this appears in a number of places. Number 9. The Maharam Mintz elsewhere says, uba boker, in the morning, holchim achatan v'hakala ba'avukos. They go in the morning with these torches, l'chatser beit ha'kneset, to the yard in the shul, la'asot mine, to do the mine. Kaminhagair, each city according to the minhag, the acha hamain, and after the main minhag, the minhag is bekama bekilos shemeshivin chasan v'kala tachat kippah. They put them under a kippah. So, what is a kippah? We'll see. Hanaset l'shemkak, which is made specially for that. V'zeu chupa shelanu, and this is chupa shelanu. So he seems to indicate that there was a two-stage wedding in the morning. They do the mine with the torches. What? And in the afternoon, what's that?
What is mine?
We'll get there. Okay. And in the afternoon, they do some kind of a regular, quote-unquote, chuppah. And they put a kippah over both of them. So we'll see. One of the interesting things about the Jewish wedding is that there's absolute clarity in halacha as to what is kiddushin. Kiddushin is the chosan gives a gift to the kala. He says, hari ama kudeshetli, she accepts the gift, and everyone agrees on that. But when it comes to nisuin, what is chuppah? There are 7 or 8 different opinions. We had a shir on this once some time ago. Is it the canopy? Is it the bedekin? Is it the yichud room? Is it that? And we'll see a little bit of that dynamic coming out. So what is a mine? Itamar is asking. So there is a somewhat confusing source in Chazal. Number 10, Masechet Sofrim. What do we do on a wedding day? Nahagu rabbi seilu lomo baboker birkat chasanim al hakos ba'asara. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. In the morning, we say sheva brachas on a cup with a minyan. So far, okay, we don't all have our weddings in the morning. It's actually quite rare to have a wedding these days in the morning, except on a Friday morning. But you do the wedding in the morning. V'chein ba'erev, and you do it again in the evening, kaidem suda, before the meal. Why? I did it in the morning. Why am I doing a chuppah again in the afternoon, before the meal? This is not sheva brachas after the benching. This is another chuppah or another Sheva Brachas, it seems, at the end of the day. So the answer to this question is as follows, and I brought you a later Achron here, number 11, one of the Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer, who explains what's really going on here. And then I'll bring you a little bit in English, we'll read together. V'hinei masha hikshal Rabbeinu. So he quotes from the Chasam Sofer, we'll see this tshuva soon. Midivrei ha-ma'aril v'ha-ma'aram mints, and they quote from the sources that we've seen. V'ha-hevi ba'asam Hashem b'shal shen tshuva Chasam Sofer, and the Chasam Sofer addresses this as follows. U'bi'er, in second line here, he explains. D'chol zeh haya bizmanam. This is how they used to do it back in the day. Shehayu oisim beis chuppos. They had two chuppos. A chuppos main. They had a chuppos main. Shehaya tzchilat ha-chuppa, which is the beginning of the chuppa. Tiknu la'asot b'chutz. They did that dafka outside. L'simon bracha. It was the chuppos main that they had outside. V'ha-chuppa ha-shniya. And the second chuppa, im birchoseha, meaning they didn't make the Sheva Brachas twice. They did the chuppah in the morning without Sheva Brachas, and they did another chuppah in the evening in the afternoon with the brachas. Also, b'beis haknesses, and they did that in shul. So you're asking yourself, so did they do the chuppah outside or inside? The answer is both. The morning chuppah outside, the evening chuppah or the afternoon chuppah inside. V'nimsa lefize, the me'olam lo nagul says the chuppah kulam b'beis haknesses. So they didn't do everything in the shul, but they split it. And let me bring you now a little bit of reference on this.
When did he give the ring with the two?
I don't know, and that's bothering me. I don't know when they did the kiddushin. So eventually we did it all together. But the minhag originally is they did the kiddushin maybe a year before. So there's no mention here of the kiddushin. So either they would have done it at the beginning of the day, before the Chuppat Main, or they did it already a few months ago, but I'm not sure, and that's going to make a big difference in a minute, because we're going to see that according to this Minag, the Chosan and Kala are holding hands. And we're going to say, oh, so what? The Chosan and Kala are holding hands? So that actually becomes quite relevant. Let's do a little bit more. Number 12. So this is from the Yekas have Shlomo Bamberger has an organization called Machon Moreshes Ashkenaz. And he has four Svarim on this, and there's an English Sefer, which is a summary of those four Hebrew Svarim. And I brought this from a translation that I found online. I also referenced the Hebrew. You can check it against that. Number 12. According to an ancient tradition attributed to Maseches Sofrim, which we just saw, and explicated in the works of the Ga'onim, Rishonim, and Achronim, there is a Ga'onim angle on this, which we didn't bring, the wedding is divided into two chuppah ceremonies. The first chuppah is referred to as chuppah's main. We still don't know why. And the second, in which Kiddushin is performed, so he answered your question. Kiddushin is on the second. I didn't notice that before. Kiddushin is the second. And Sheva Brachas, actually that now I understand now a little bit more. And Sheva Brachas, the second one is called the Chuppas Talis, the Chuppat Talit. Okay, the mine is the first one, the Talit is the second. Oh, we'll see, maybe. No, go to page 3. In earlier times, the Chuppat mine was held before Shacharis. And the Chuppat Talis was held after Shacharis or after Mincha. According to the Rokeach, the reason for holding the wedding so early in the morning is because of the conceptual similarity to the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai, which took place in the morning. Since the Chuppat Main was held very early in the morning, the assembly would bear torches and candles to light the way. Now you know why we have torches as we walk the Chasam and Kala down the aisle, because originally with the Ashkenazim, with the Chuppat Main, it was dark. It was before Shacharis, at the very end of the night. They knocked on everybody's doors. They went out in the last part of the night, and they walked with candles down the street. I don't know, do the Sfarim use candles as well? Or only the Ashkenazim? I think only the Ashkenazim. Okay, fine. It is also reminiscent of the lightning flashes that were seen on Sinai as it became more and more difficult to gather participants so early in the morning. The two chuppah ceremonies were held before and after mincha or before and after marriage. Some perform the two chuppah ceremonies, one immediately after the other, with no intervening services. The chuppah's main proceeds as follows. The assembly accompanies the groom to the entrance to the synagogue, courtyard, in Mainz and its hamlet, or to the door of the wedding house, in Worms and its hamlet. We'll see different. Mainz could be the main that we're talking about. If the rabbi is to officiate the ceremony, he escorts the groom to the chuppah with the groom leading, the rabbi following, and the rest of the assembly behind or ahead of them. The assembly escorting the bride and groom to the chuppah carries lit torches in the chuppah's main only, and not at the chuppah's talit. The children are usually given the task to bear the candles and torches simply because they enjoy such activities. All the kids are pyromaniacs, they like carrying fire. Musicians play the ancient chuppah's main melody. The same triumphal melody is used on Purim when reading the verse, V'yitlu et Haman, in the scroll of Esther. So they sing the same tune. When the groom arrives at the chuppah area, the officiating rabbi takes him by the hand, not the arm,
to the chuppat mayim bench. What's this chuppat mayim bench? Where he waits for the bride, and the groom sits down, and his escorts flank him on both sides. And in case you want to know what this ancient Yekish melody is that they sang to the Megillah and also to the Chuppat Mayim, I brought it for you here, courtesy of Rabbi Bamberger. If you can't read music, it goes like this. It goes da 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 na 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 na. It doesn't mean anything to me. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It doesn't mean much to me. Apparently, there were people who sang Devai Haser to this melody. But if you ever go to a Yekusha wedding and they start singing this, then you'll know where it's from. Now, 13. The torchbearers, musicians, and the bride's friends accompany the bride from her home to the chuppah area, accompanied by a separate retinue of women. The bride's face remained covered with a cloth veil while walking to and from the chuppah. Two women or the two mothers walk beside her. Since the bride's face is covered, her attendants support her by holding her arms. Since the groom's face is not covered, his arms are not held. When the bride reaches the entrance to the synagogue courtyard, the rabbi takes the groom by the hand and leads him to the bride, accompanied by distinguished members of the community. The groom takes the bride's hand and thereby affects the nisuin stage of the marriage. And this is what confused me. Because when did they do kiddushin? They said they did kiddushin later, and now it's saying they're doing nisuin. In terms of hand-holding, it's very clear halacha that the chasen and the kala are not allowed to hold hands between the kiddushin and the nisuin. Before the kiddushin, is already a debate, if the kala kala has been to the mikvah, and that's become more popular these days to have photographs before the chuppah, but that is not itself so straightforward. So I'm trying to work out where the hand-holding is happening here. And I brought you in the footnote, Rabbi Bamberger, in his book, in the English book, he says, and if the kala was ritually pure, the groom even takes her by the arm, and they walk in arm by arm in arm. So first of all, that seems a bit risque to me. And secondly, does it imply that if the kala was not tahora, then he just holds her by the hand? That itself is very questionable. How, if she was in nida, how would he hold? I don't know the answers to these questions. We need to dig deep. I didn't have the opportunity. Okay, tzniut is very relative. Holding, you might say the chas and the kala now walk back from the chuppah at the end, holding hands. A few, you know, decades ago, that was considered very bad form. But now, tzniut is not the main issue here, because tzniut, I think, is subjective, whereas hilchot nida is much more objective.
Itamar? How does the chatam know it is his kala? Because she's covered, and when she walks away, she's still covered.
Emuna pshuta. Well, he trusts. And you know something? It didn't work out too well for Yaakov on that front. Okay, so let's just finish this. All three walk in this fashion to the mine bench. And again, we're still in the morning, so I don't know if Kiddush has happened, which is considered the official chuppah. Ah, now we have the bench. The bench is the chuppah for this mine chuppah. During this procession, the participants throw wheat kernels on the couple and call out Pru Ravu. If the participants are likely to take offense at the bride and groom holding hands, this is Miriam Sneer's concern, he may hold on to part of her bouquet instead. The bride and the groom sit together for a short time on the bench or platform. The bride's attendant is called at home, and then the young boys lead the groom to prayer service in the synagogue. The rabbi and the rest of the assembly follow them. Chuppas Mayim is held only for a woman's first marriage. And if you look here on the top of page 4, I brought you, again, courtesy of Rabbi Bamberger's book, a little illustration from a Maxa in 1320 of the Chatan and the Kala, with a nice discreet little tree between them, sitting on a bench with a like an archway, with a wooden, a special... It's kind of like a chuppah, but it's not on poles. It's a bench with a wooden archway over the top of it. And I brought you here... And number 14, the custom in Mainz and the communities that followed his tradition was to conduct the chuppat mine outdoors in the yard of the synagogue as a sign of the blessing. The couple should multiply like the stars. In Worms and the communities that followed its traditions, by contrast, the chuppat mine was customarily held on a community wedding hall. This custom perhaps follows the view of the Sefer HaItur, defining chuppah as bringing the bride into a specially designated building. And this is a very important point. Because as I mentioned, there are different views on what chuppah is. If chuppah is the chosen bringing the bride into his domain, into his closed area, then having something outdoors under the stars is lacking a key element of that. It has to be inside somewhere where the chosen owns the thing. We'll see soon the chuppah talit. He puts his garment over her. Now, we're all conditioned to say, oh, well, you've got a chuppah. What do you know? You've got a piece of cloth and four poles. And that's the domain. That, since when is that called a domain? So you've heard all of the nice Divrei Torah. It's like the tents of sorrow with all the walls. But we'll see in a minute, according to many of the Mefarshim, the chuppah as we know it is a modern phenomenon. Before the 15th, 16th century, no one did that. They did, the Ashkenazim did this chuppat mine and then a chuppat talit, but the actual canopy was problematic, A, because it doesn't really cover anybody, it's just above them, and secondly, because it doesn't belong to the chatan. Yes?
In 13, where you say the bride's attendants board her home, the boys tell you the bloom to prayer services, there's no yichud.
Not yet, but that's later. They haven't done the second chuppah yet. They're going to do a second chuppah this evening, have a party, and then they're going to do yichud. Finally, Itamar's question. What is this mine business? Number 15. The word mine, he says, is used in reference to this event. It's spelled in Hebrew in different ways. And I brought you the five spellings that Rabbi Bamberger brings. And in German, it's main, man, etc. Various theories have been proposed to explain the term's origin and meaning, the most reasonable of which identifies it as derivative of either the German word mein, which means to rejoice, or the word gemein, which means joined or unified, as in Gemeinschaft, is a company in German, or Austrittsgemeinde, or breaking the community, etc. So the two words that he didn't use here are either Mainz, meaning how do we know it's not from the town, Chuppat Mainz, maybe it was originally called the Chuppat Mainz. Frankfurt, we'll get there. And there's another resonance which we'll see in a minute. Okay, fine. And we stopped doing that. Rabbi Bamberger suggests as people started moving to the suburbs, out of the ghettos, people couldn't wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and walk down the streets. They all lived all over the place. And the Reform didn't like it. They felt it was very primitive and medieval. And therefore, it basically fell away. There is a theory, by the way, that Rabbi Bamberger brings, that what we do today as the Bedeckan, which kind of sticks out at the beginning before anything, why do we do this, could be the vestigial remains of the Chuppat Mein. That we don't any longer have a Chuppat Mein, but we have the ceremony with the Bedeckan. Could be. Yes?
A couple of months ago, I was at a talk by a professor of Jewish folklore on German, Jewish-German marriage customs. And he showed contemporary pictures of a ceremony under a kind of plaque on the north wall of the outside of the Beit Knesset.
Yes. Interesting. But that was outside in the courtyard.
Outside?
Yes.
On the north wall.
On the north wall.
Because that's where things came from.
Oh, but yes. That was part of the Zeichel HaChurban in the wedding. They stood by the north. Very interesting. I've never heard that.
And I don't know if that's anything to do with it.
I don't know, but it's outside, which is interesting. Yeah. And that's the point here. I brought you the Chuppah Talit. We're going to speak about that very briefly. The Chuppah Talit, some people still do this. They put the Chatan, puts the Talit over the Kala under the Chuppah. And I think that's catching on again. But that was the Chuppah. And here's a painting from an Italian painting from the 15th century. And here's a very old illustration from 1272. There you have a chatan and a kala. Interesting. I can't work out which is a chatan and which is a kala. I think that the one with long curly hair is the chatan, actually, with a hat on. And the kala is in full covering there. Okay, fine. But the idea of a canopy, just go over for a second to page 5. The canopy actually was originally used as a processional. For example, this, again, courtesy of the book, this Jewish delegation to the Pope in 1417, they walked there under a canopy. Now, also to keep the sun off, I suppose, but this was a sign of a dignitary. A dignitary walks under a canopy. And similarly, I brought you a Frankfurt etching there from 1617, where the kala is being walked to the ceremony. The processional is under the chuppah. But the use of the chuppah only caught on later, and I brought this in number 16. The Ramah in Poland in the 16th century says, Haminag pashut achshav. Today, I'll tell you what a wedding looks like. Likrot chuppah makom shemachnis in sham yiriyah. A chuppah for us is something where you have a cloth, prusa agabi klun salt, which is put on poles. And you bring the chosan and kala under the poles, under the canopy, barabim in public. And you do the kiddushin then, umavarchin shem shev abrichas erusin, and soon you do everything under this chuppah. Then we take them into a room, that's the yichud room, and they eat together in a private place, just the two of them. This is what chuppah is now. Meaning, I don't know what kind of chuppahs you used to do in the Middle Ages, he's saying, but in Poland in the 1600s, this is what a chuppah looks like. He puts it in Shulchan Aruch, and that is what we do today. As to how old this idea of doing the chuppah dafka outside, we'll see that soon as well, I brought you a Tosfos I'm not going to dwell on in number 17, which says, he talks there about where did they do the chuppah, then he said, well, it depends. If they had a lot of guests, they did it outside in the courtyard. If they had a smaller wedding, they did it inside. So it didn't seem to matter that much to them whether they did it dafka inside or dafka outside. It seemed to be more of a practical thing. I actually went to a wedding this week in the Israel Science Museum, which was very interesting. Just like as a venue for a wedding, everyone could play with all the exhibits and all that. But I'm saying you can do the wedding anywhere. But nevertheless, as we know today, a lot of people are very makpid to have it outside, even if all you have is a little hole in the roof so that they can just be standing under. It seems a little bit token, because the point is to be outside, to look at the stars, to see the sky, to feel the bracha. But nevertheless, people take it very seriously. We'll get back to that in a minute. But first of all, a little digression for a few minutes about what is a siman tov. What does it mean that we do this for a siman tov? And he will have another idea as to what the chuppat minds or mine is. So first of all, let's talk about anointing a king. Number 18, says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Ein Moshchim es ha Malachim. We'd only anoint a king el ala ma'yan, at a ma'yan, at a spring. Kadeshi timashech malchutam, so that timshach malchutam, so that their kingship will extend, it will bubble, it will be fresh, it will keep going, it will never end. And he brings a posik there from David HaMelech. It's a famous posik from the Haftarah where David's dying, and he tells Natan HaNavi and Sadok HaKohen to go down and anoint his son Shlomo at the Gihon. For those who are into British coronation ceremony, this is the posik on which Zadok the priest, when they take the king, as they took, if you saw the coronation, they took King Charles into a Makom Tzanua, very interesting, they close it with barriers, and they sing Zadok the priest by Handel, which basically is this posik, that Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, etc., etc. Okay, so what has it got to do with us? So Rashi points out, the point is, it's at a Mayan. It has to dafka be at a Mayan, and that is the psak of the Rambam in number 20, Kshemoshchim Malchei Beis David, when they anoint the true kings of Beit David, Ein Moshchim Oisan Ela Al HaMa'ayan. Now, you should already be wondering, is there any connection between the Ma'ayan and the Mayan? Or is that just random? So have a look at Rav Yitzchak Weiss, number 21. So he talks about a siman tov and all the different the things that make up a siman tov. That would be siman tov at the wedding. There has to be siman tov. Kamod itzba asiyas achupa tachas hashamayim. Like we said, the chupa has to be under the heavens. The siman tov sheyehei zarev kokoch v'hashamayim. Fine. Kamod shekazav arama. The agav, and he says, I want to claim chashavti haperish b'ma de itzba hashchasam sefer. I've looked at this commentary in the Chasam Sofer, b'shem Shuvas HaMaharam Mintz, and when he brings the Maharam Mintz, b'chuppah she'ozen tachas kippas HaShemayim, and nikra chuppas mayim, and they call this a chuppas mayim, who kinireh, and I think he says, the perush milat mayim, shem ha'machos, it's either what you said before, it's the place, k'mo, Frankfurt de Main, and we saw that in Mainz, they actually did it outdoors, dafka, as opposed to Worms. Aval yesh lama, I want to suggest something else. We take the king to a Mayan, to a spring, so they will have a long reign. And this brings the Rambam, and he says, therefore, Harishim Nimshach ala Mayan Mishum Simantov. And therefore, this word Mayan is a shorthand for Simantov. Simantov. The chain kupa tachas ki patashamaim, the Simantov, and nikra kupas mine. And they just switch the ayin and the aleph. Therefore, mine, whenever you say the word mine, that's the code word for simantov. That's going to be, okay, that's a nice, it's an inventive idea. But now I've exhausted all the different things I have to say about chuppat mine and what that could possibly be. As far as the simantov, so the Gemara raises the question of, well, why isn't this a prohibition of superstition? Like, we're not a superstitious religion. I mean, we shouldn't be. And in fact, there's a Torah prohibition of nichush. You're not allowed to interpret signs, and you're not allowed to say, I don't want a number 13. Jewish houses can be 13, and non-Jewish houses, they don't want to be 13, etc. These are all real halachic issues. So the Gemara says the following. Tana Rabbana, number 22. They say exactly what we're saying here. You only take the king down, you take them down to a spring. Kadesh Yitim Shach Malchutam. I'm a Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami says, I'll tell you all about this Siman Tov. Have a man, Hayman the boy later in Masik Shasya Ilah. If you stand to coming towards Rosh Hashanah and you want to know if you're going to survive the year, Nikli Shraga, you put up a candle, but Aseris Yimei, in the 10 days to be in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, during the Aseris Yimei Tshuva, you put up a candle, but base it in your house, the light Nashiv Zika in a place where it's not windy. Because if it's windy, of course the candle's going to go out. If the candle, like a long-lasting candle, if the candle burns, then you'll know you're going to make it through the year. But if the candle goes out, nevach. Okay, no good. Someone who wants to start a new business. So boy lameda, you want to know, mitzlach or not mitzlach, is he going to succeed or not? You should raise chickens. Take a chicken. If your chicken grows fat and happy, if you have a fat, happy chicken, healthy chicken, mitzlach. Then you'll have a fat, happy, healthy business. And Haiman Lemefig L'Orach, someone who wants to go on a long, dangerous journey, or boy Lemeide Ichaza, V'asi Lebeis Eloi, he wants to know, will he ever get back home again from this dangerous journey? Nekim Bebeisi D'Chavra, you go to a dark place, V'Ichazi B'boa D'Boa, and he looked for his shadow, but not just the shadow, but the secondary shadow, the shadow that's made from the shadow. There's different interpretations of what this is. Later, the Hadavah Asil Beis. If you can see one of these shadows, then Baruch Hashem. But if you can't see any shadow, then it's a dangerous journey. Says the Gemara on all of these things, V'lav, Milsa, He. And none of these things are correct. You mustn't do any of these things. Dilma, how should I say? Because they'll upset you. You don't think you're going to live through the year or come back from your journey. Umesri Mazle, and the fact that you're depressed will itself change your mazel. There's a very interesting psychology here. Yeah. Like, that whether you will be successful to some degree depends on whether you think you'll be successful. And if you think you're going to fail, then you'll fail. The actual psychological state has ruined your mazel. Don't do any of these things. What should you do? Amar Abaya, Hashtada Amra Simana Milsahi, but we do have an idea that a siman is a real thing. So la'olam ye'iragi le'merzi bereishis shatzah. And Rosh Hashanah, what should you do? You should have in front of you kra, v'rubia, v'karati, v'silka, v'tamri, all the simanim that we have on Rosh Hashanah. That you can do. And we had a shir on this a couple of years ago. I'm not going to go into great details, but the understanding of these simanim go in either one or two ways. The Me'iri says that you put the siman there in order to look at it and think about it. And just as these things are all resonant of good ideas and good omens, as it were, you'll think those positive thoughts, and then you'll have a good year. But, says the Me'iri, since people start to get all superstitious and they think that the carrot sitting in front of you is going to give you a good year, therefore the minhag became to say a yehi rotzon. So you shouldn't, chas v'shalom, think that the carrot is what's giving you a good year. The carrot is just helping you think of the good things, of the things you need to do next year, and the Yehi Rotzon will keep you focused. So says the Me'iri, first comes the carrot, then comes the Yehi Rotzon. And it's all there to help you realize that it's for a Siman Tov. And again, I'm not going to go through this in detail, but I brought you another way of looking at it over the page. In the Chai Adam brings the Ramban. The Ramban says the other way around. Says the Ramban says that first you have the Yehi Rotzon, and then you have the carrot, as it were. He brings an example of what does it mean, Masa Avos Siman Labanim. The Hashem said to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all these things are going to happen to your children. They're going to have good brachas, they're going to inherit the land of Israel, and okay, that's very nice, I like that idea. Now do something concrete and physical to, if you like, make that bracha chal, make that bracha real in your eyes. And that's why Avram Avinu had to walk around the land. Why can't he just say, okay, I've got a bracha, I will inherit the land? No, now you have to walk around the land in order to concretize that image in your mind. So to each Navi had a certain image. This Navi had to do this, and this Navi had to do that, and this one had to take two sticks and put them together. Why are they doing these things? They've been given the Nevuah. Says the Ramban, it's the Siman actually allows the Nevuah to be concrete. So whichever way you look at it, there is such a thing as a Siman Tov. So we want the Chosan and Kala to have a long, happy, fruitful life together. So we take them outside and we say, look at the sky. This is reminiscent of the bracha, meaning you should know the bracha already because you should know Parshas Lech Lecha. So I don't need to take you under the sky, but the sky will help you remember that this is what the bracha is. That you're going to have, that you've been told, that Hashem has promised the Jewish people will have a long and happy life and have lots of children. Okay. And the Shulchan Aruch actually brings you, let's do a look at the bottom line, 28, before we get into the modern developments. Says the Shulchan Aruch, 28. It's just, and then we've got two interesting tshuvas to look at together. Nahagu she'ein matchilim bebeis or bedalad. So it says, there are minhagim that people don't start a new job on a Monday or a Wednesday. Generally speaking, by the way, even numbers I didn't remind people to turn off their phone. At least that was a nice phone ring. I like classical music. But generally speaking, Jewish people are not so excited about even numbers. Even in the Gemara in Pesachim, when it talks about four cups of wine on Seder night, the Gemara is astounded. Certainly the Talmud Bavli, which is maybe a little bit more susceptible to these concerns. How can you have zugos? How can you have 2, 4, 6, 8? We don't do that because that brings that's reminiscent of Zoroastrianism and duality and dualism. We're into odd numbers. And if you look at the days of the weeks of the creation, the good stuff happened on day 1, 3, 5, 7, and the bad stuff happened on day 2, 4, and 6. And you can go and look at it and think how that works, etc. 2 was machlokas, and 4 was the, you know, it says the curses of the illness for the children, and 6 was the chet, whereas 1 was creation, and 3 were, I'm not getting into all of it now, 7 is Shabbos. And by the way, if we can get not just an odd number, but a prime number, which by definition has to be an odd number, if we can get a prime number, oh, then we're like over the moon. We just love our prime numbers. Because again, I heard from Rav Yoel Ben Nun, prime numbers are indivisible. That's the point of prime numbers. And the unity and the monism, if you like, of Judaism drives us to love the prime numbers. 13 is the prime number. 7 is a prime number. 613 is a prime number, which is interesting. He's doing 3 in his head working it out. I promise you, it's a prime number. Yeah? And therefore, there are minhagim that we don't start on a Monday and a Wednesday because they're bad mazel. And similarly, we only marry women we only get married as the moon is rising, as the moon is growing. You only have a wedding in the first half of the month, says the Ramar. You should start a new mesecta on Rosh Chodesh. Because these things are all permitted, because there's a simon. But Masha Adam Yodesh, then he talks about mazel. Interestingly, are we makpid to have weddings only in the first half of the month? No, we're really not. You have a wedding whenever there's a hall available. That's the way it works. Okay? And I imagine if you take, you know, research, probably it's half and half. I got married on the 22nd of the month. People get married whenever they can get married. So we just ignore that. Why do we then have this issue? We have to get married outside. To the point, and we'll see the tshuvas now, some rabbonim will not perform a siddur kiddushin if the wedding is in the shul. They won't come. They just won't come. The Chabad weddings are outside even if there's a blizzard. You know, friends of ours have got married with the Kala had a fur coat in a snowstorm, literally. So why are we so, you know, out of kilter on these 2 weeks? Okay, there's a Simon Tov, you have a wedding outside. There's a Simon Tov, you get married in the first half of the month. So we're not bothered about one, but some people are incredibly bothered about the other. Where does that come from? So partly that comes from the Reform movement. Look in number 19, the Chasam Sofer. Let's have a look at the Chasam Sofer. Number 29, excuse me. I think I said 19 by mistake. 29, the bottom of page 7. Says the Chatam Sofer. He's asked the question, Im emet nachon l'shanot minag kadmonim, should we change our ancient minag la'asot ha'chupa ve'beit ha'kneset ha'kadosh? To have the chupa inside the shul. Now, why were people in the 19th century driving to have their weddings inside the shul? Because Christians, they'll have their weddings inside the church. And therefore, if they get married in the church, we should get married in a shul. Because, you know, we have a very Western view of what a marriage should look like, with a white dress and people playing, here come the bride, here comes the bride, etc., etc. Although I think this was actually before Mendelssohn wrote Here Comes the Bride, but that's not for now. Actually, no, it was Wagner that wrote Here Comes the Bride, sorry. Before anyone picks me up on that. But for sure, it was before that. So look at the tshuva. So he brings the Ramah that says you should have a wedding outside. There's a Simon Tov. Okay, very nice. And then he's third line down in number 29. Shara Shadala, the tshuva is Maharam Mintz, and he quotes the Maharam Mintz, which we've seen as well. Im kei mavo ha-shayis in chuppas tachas ha-shamayim. We made the chuppah outside. Avaldu, but you should know. Ki kol ha-minhagim halalu sheva ashkenaz. All of these ashkenazim minhagim. Noistu alpi rabosenu balei ha-toisfas. They've all been established by Tosfos and Rashi and Talmud of Toshvei Eretz, Hahi, and that meaning they go back all the way, which by the way we'll see, Rav Moshe Feinstein later says, I don't know what you're talking about, because we just saw in Tosfos before, at least one Tosfos, that where did they have the wedding, inside or outside? Depending on how many guests. Lots of people that did it outside, not so many. So don't let's overreach and say that everything comes from ancient. Maybe they were different menhagim. But even Rav Moshe picks up on that. The Hemarol Ki Tov Ma'oi, these elders of our community saw that this was very good. Lasoit Siman Tov, Librikasam Shil Zera Avram. Okay, so what should we do? So flip over the page to page. So see what he says. Shiyesh Lana Asod Poyel Dimyon, we should always act in such a way, la'amshicha brocha b'sha'as ha'ru'uya, lekach, to try and bring brocha, don't you want brocha for the chasen and kala, b'sha'as chupa, tachas kipat ha'rakia, b'mokam ha'ru'uya l'ri'yas kochavim, in a place where you can see the stars, even if you can't actually see the stars. And this is, by the way, where one of the Talmidim of the Talmidei of the Chasam Sofer writes about what about a glass bubble on top of you. And he says, even though you can see the stars, it doesn't count because you're not under Kippat HaShamayim. And there he brings down from a sukkah. Just like if you, there's an idea you should be able to see the stars inside a sukkah. Although that's a little bit of a fake, like a red herring. You really need to see the stars. But you can't have a glass roof over the sukkah even if the stars are visible. So he says, we have this idea. And the elders of our community also said, but Markham Kaddish, on the other hand, there is an idea that you should say the Shev Brochas in a holy place. B'mokam kavul amit palel, in a place where you daven. So now you have different things pulling in different directions. I have this minag, to have the wedding outside because of a siman tov, but then I also want to say the sheva brochas inside a shul because it's mokam kadosh. So how am I going to do this? Maybe this was one of the reasons for the two-stage chuppah. One could be outside, one could be inside, and everyone can have their cake and eat it. So achzu v'zeh gam v'zeh, and he says they ended up having both. They didn't have both. And he talks about this idea of the chuppat main in the morning and the chuppas in the afternoon as well. Next paragraph. Amna. Kol zyeva betula de ikka travaihu. The besula, a woman who was hadn't been married before, had this split wedding, main and chuppah. Aval ba'almona, but with a woman who was widowed, Nebach, the leika maya, she never had this early chuppah, ba'ashkenaz, rol asat ha'chuppah in b'kaseh ha'tachas ha'shamayim, the simon broch. We wanted as much siman brocha as we can for this lady because she needs even more siman brocha because Nebuch, she's been through a marriage before and her husband passed away and therefore she gets double brocha. Siman brocha, mavarachin shana seven brochas, kichashu tam b'zeik. Fine. U'mizeh lama darama, and that's why the Rama says that, you know something, do all the weddings outside. Last paragraph. V'yesh litmo al minag ashkenaz, shalakshav. So why are people having weddings inside now? Bizmaneinu afal pi shenagu b'chupas main. Even though they used to do the chuppas mayim, mikol makam oisin gam chuppa im sheva brachas takas harakia b'chatzer v'beis hakneses. Now he says what everybody does is they do it in the chatzer, they do it in the shul courtyard. It's interesting. Ve'ein shem makam b'chal Ashkenaz she'oisin chuppa b'beis hakneses. Nobody does it inside. People have started now, but nobody used to do it inside. Ve'ulai mishum deba Ashkenaz loy naku b'shum makam liyois nivne prosdor lifnei b'beis hakneses. This is very interesting. He says maybe it's because of Ashkenazi synagogue design. Why did they do it in the shul courtyard? Because they didn't have a little shul. They didn't have a corridor where they davened like the breakaway minyan. And they davened like a shtiebel in the yard as well. Therefore, you have your cake and eat it. It's outside and it's a mokum tefillah. Okay, very nice. However, the last thing he says is very important, which is just the last few lines. V'hasa liknin kol Yisrael yotzin b'yad Ramah, but we have a principle, we follow the Ramah. Kol Yisrael yotzin b'yad Ramah, we follow the Ramah who says do it outside. L'hamid ha'chupa tachas ha'shamayim. L'siman ha'tov, l'hikayim bo birkas avram. Fine. V'asher lo chafatz b'broch, and here's the key thing. But what if you don't want to? So the Chosan and Kala say, we must have it in shul. We have to have it in shul. V'nirchak b'menu miskavin l'ilmoid midarche ha'umos o'olam. And these people who want to have it in shul want to copy the non-Jews. They want to have a quote-unquote church wedding. And they're not, they don't have this bracha. The non-Jews weren't giving this bracha. Just like they get married in a church, these people want to get married in a shul. So they'll be like the non-Jews. They'll lose the bracha. They've lost the bracha. But if you want to have this special bracha, you should be like everyone always was, and you should have your chuppah outside. Okay. What did he say? Did he say you can't have it in the shul? He didn't say you can't have it in the shul. He said, if you want to have it in the shul, I'm concerned that you're copying the non-Jews, and you're going to lose the bracha. Okay? So maybe someone will say, you know something? I'll lose the bracha. My in-laws want to have a wedding in the shul. They like stained glass windows. And Shalom on Yisrael. I'll lose the bracha. He doesn't like it, but he didn't say it was osa. The bracha of Avraham Avinu of Tachatachatachatachatachatachatachatach. I brought you another reason. Just skip to number 32. By the way, very often, 30 and 31, these two minhagim are often put together, of having the wedding at the beginning of the month for bracha, because the moon is growing, and having the wedding outside for bracha. And again, like I said, if we dropped one, why can't we drop the other? So Rabbi Morris Lamb wrote some very important books in English about Avelis, and also about weddings. So I brought you here what he says in number 32. The community could not abide placing the chuppah directly in front of the ark, because the chuppah is, after all, a public representation of the bridal chamber. It's an interesting one I'd never even thought of. Hence, the chuppah was kept on the synagogue grounds, but it was held in the chatzer, Beit HaKnesset, or Shulhav, rather than in the sanctuary. And the Rama in the 16th century, who was the first to record the use of a portable room in the form of a chuppah, was also the first to record the outdoor wedding. For the Rama, an outdoor wedding was remembered at the stars, etc., etc., a large number of guests. So he brings this idea that we don't want the chuppah in shul because it's like pasnish. The chuppah represents the bridal chamber. I'm not sure if anyone sees it quite in that way. I remember when my wife and I did the chuppah in shul. It's a very beautiful shul, my wife's shul, my parents' shul. And then they took us into the yichud room, and the yichud room was the little shul. But the little shul had an Aron Kodesh in it. Okay? And so they kind of went down this route and they said, well, it's one thing having the ceremony in the shul, but having the yichud room, even though what do you do in the yichud room? You sit and eat a piece of cake, and because you've been starving all day. So you can't have the yichud room with the Aron Kodesh. And then we had like numerous rabbis in the yichud room looking around and deciding whether it was a good yichud room or a bad yichud room. We were just sitting there now, like waiting to, you know, whatever. And by the time they decided what to do, some kid had stolen the food and taken all the food away. So, okay, fine. So there you are. But it was, I don't know if this was a Simon Tov, but it was a, okay, whatever. So that's another consideration. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked to Shaila. And with this, we'll finish really. I'll mention Rav Avadia towards the very end. And we'll look at a couple of ideas in this Rav Moshe. I won't have time to read every single line. Rav Moshe was asked, number 33, Im Yesh Isur, is there a prohibition, or Midat Chasidut, or even a Chumrah, Shelo yelech harav, that a rav should refuse to go l'sader kiddushin b'chuppah she'oisim b'beis ha'knesses. Okay, this is a 1956 tshuva. So he says, there are rabbonim that say, I won't go. I won't do it. I know rabbonim to this day that won't do a siddur kiddushin if it's inside, because they say it's copying the goyim, copying the non-Jews. Okay, so he says a few things. In the first chapter, its first paragraph there, he says, first of all, the Rav should be going to the ceremony, number one, to make sure that it's being done right. Because if you're not there, what are they going to do? They're going to mess it all up. Number two, because it's in your contract to go. Yeah, number two. And number three, because it's Derech Eretz to go. Because just in terms of wishing the couple well, you're going to make a stand on the day of the couple's wedding. That's a great recipe for broikas in the community going forward. So he says, first of all, not only can you go, but you have to go to get it right, to do all your job, and also to befriend. And then he talks about the issues of the Chasam Sofer. And he says at the end of the day, the Chasam Sofer never said it was awesome. He never said he was asa. The Chasam Sofer just said, you'll lose the bracha because you're trying to copy the non-Jews. And he says today, Rav Moshe says, today nobody's having a wedding in a shul because they're trying to copy the non-Jews. They're having a wedding in a shul because they like to have things in the shul. And by the way, it's not copying the non-Jews, he said. If you were copying the non-Jews, you'd have your wedding in a church. Good point. He said, in the shul, it's not a church. You're having it in a shul because you're from Jew. That's not called copying the non-Jews. And therefore, he says, it's absolutely fine. You are allowed to have the wedding inside, and you won't even necessarily lose the bracha. And then he says an interesting thing. There are lots of things that Chazal said about when you should do weddings. For example, they said you should do a wedding on a Wednesday. Should do a wedding on a Wednesday so that you've got 3 days of celebration. Thursday, you can have a long weekend. Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos, and then the chosn will kind of go to work the next week on Sunday. Does everyone have a wedding on a Wednesday? Not everyone has a wedding on a Wednesday. Again, you have a wedding when you can have a wedding. So he says, this is in Chazal. Chazal say you should have your wedding on a Wednesday. And we're not particular about that because it doesn't fit. It's not like a chiyuv. All the more so having your wedding outside, which is, doesn't even appear in Chazal. The idea of having a wedding outside has its provenance from the late Rishonim, at the earliest that we can see. So it says if we're not particular about some of these other ideas because they're not halachic, they're just eitzah, they're good advice, we're not necessarily going to be particular on this either. And therefore he says not only can you have the wedding there, but the rabbi has to go and the chosn kala don't have to worry about it. So he's nevertheless lenient about it. And I think the point about shalom is a very important point. If the rabbi has a particular concern about doing a wedding inside, he needs to understand what the downside of insisting on that's going to be. And that brings me back to this wedding where the chosn and kala are dripping wet under the chuppah. I really felt very strongly, I wasn't in a position to say anything, that however important you think the wedding being outside is, it's not halakhically required, and what you're doing to the chosn and kala is, in my view, halakhically prohibited. You know, putting them in this situation. Can you imagine how much money she spent on a makeup and a hairdo? And now she's standing there, literally dripping. You're like, unbelievable. And they were saying, oh, it's bracha min hashamayim. I know, it drives you crazy. People fixate on things which they blow up into enormous ideas, and they're not necessary. Two other points just before we finish. Rabbi Vadya brings two other issues, which I think we need to consider. Just go over to page 10 for a second. We've got through this quite well, Baruch Hashem. I brought you at the very end of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who I said is very particular. But look at number 36 and 37. So Rav Avadia has a tshuva on this. He says the same thing as Rav Moshe. Not only can you have a wedding in shul, but he says the Sfaradim don't even have the minhag of having a wedding outside. It was in the Ramah. It's from the Maharam Mintz. It's not from the Rambam or from Rav Sadia Gaon. It's from the Ashkenazim. So the Sfaradim don't even know what the problem is to start with. So he says, for sure you can have a wedding inside. But he says, I've got two problems with you having a wedding in a shul. Number 36. So he says, he brings a Ramah in Hilchas Tefillah. There is no love, or should be no love, like the love between a person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, people who like kissing in a way which is permitted. Kissing their son, kissing their daughter, the Rav kissing the Chosan. People like kissing each other. Not English people, you should just know. English people don't like kissing anyway. English people barely allow their family to kiss them anyway. Okay? But some people want to kiss everybody. La'acha richas ha'chuppah. And you know that the chuppah is going to end with a big kissing ceremony. With beheta. He's not talking about prohibited kissing. Yesh lizah bezeb beis ha'knesses. He says you should be careful because there's a halacha. And this, I find this one of the most difficult halachas. You're not meant to kiss your children, your grandchildren. Even though there's nothing halachically wrong with that kissing, shul is not the place for kissing. Rav Soloveitchik said a similar thing. The reason that you're not sitting next to your spouse or significant other in shul is because you're not meant to feel that sense of comfort, that sense of, oh, I have my loved ones by me. You're meant to feel isolation. You're meant to feel that you need to turn to God. There's nowhere else for you to turn. And when you sit in shul cuddling your grandchildren, I agree, I find it terribly difficult because they're so cute and you want to kiss them. You know, you shouldn't. You shouldn't kiss your grandchildren. Shouldn't kiss your children. So he says, no kissing, and therefore, if everyone's going to kiss, a problem. And then, number 37 says, that's just the permitted kissing. Now he's going to get on to all the prohibited kissing, all the kissing, and the men, and the women, and the flirting, and the da-da-da-da. He said, that for sure, don't do that in shul. because if it's going to happen, you know, it's bad enough, but if it's going to happen, you shouldn't do it in a shul. So that's something to think about as well. But, you know, we've covered a lot of ground there. We've finished even with a minute to spare. I think this is fascinating because it brings in something that we know, we experience on a daily basis, but a lot of the roots of this are in old minhagim that we've kind of forgotten about. And we'll see through this series on minhagim, a lot of these things will come up again and again. We see it works this way, but what we're seeing is the culmination of an evolution of minhagim that ended up the way they are in 2024. And now, of course, we're all mixed up. We're all Sephardi and Ashkenazi and everything like that, which is also not good for our minhagim. But the Yekas will remain. I'm quite sure they will hold out. All right. Hope to see you next week. Be'ezrat Hashem.